Okay, guys. So last week I went to the Efrat Library. We have a good library, Baruch Hashem. And I just took out a pile of books on Agadata. Just because I was like, look, I probably should have done that at the beginning of the year. Probably should have done that at the beginning of the year, honestly. Right? See what other people say. I had more fun this way. I think maybe next year I'll look more at other things. But I wanted to do it one year more myself. I'll be honest that I was sort of disappointed with the books I took out. The books I would want to take out if people are more impressed with, I will have to get. But the ones I got there weren't so great. But I found one chapter that I did think was it was interesting that related to our perek. So I figured I'd... What? No, this was interesting. This was, again, I don't necessarily... They didn't flesh it out nearly as much as it should have been fleshed out in this book. But I think it's... and that is the Gemaras of Antoninus and Rebbe.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah,
so it's a few places. So let's start with Yudom and Aleph. Okay? So... So this is an interesting Gemara. Let's start with where it says Yom Ginusaya Shamal Chayhem. Okay, you got it? So one of the holidays that the Gemara discusses that for the purposes of those holidays that are idolatrous,
v'chulei, right,
is Yom Ginusia. And the Gemara says, "My Yom Ginusia Shamal Chayhem." Right? You didn't have to ask me that. The Gemara says, "What exactly is a Yom Ginusia?" That's not exactly a common word, right? You know. Gunusia, right? If you get like the one-page dictionary of most common words using Gemara, Gunusia is not there. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Yom Sham Midin Vavdei Chachamim Es Malkam. It's inauguration day, right? Or the Vatanya Yom Gunusia of the Yom Sham Midin Bo Es Malache Es Malkam. How could that be? You have a brisa that says the Yom Gunusia and the day of inauguration. So Lokasha Hadi Day Hadivrei said no. One is the day in which the king becomes king, and the other one is the day in which the prince becomes king. Uh-huh. Right? Like a new king or a prince? And then the Gemara
like
says...
A dynasty
versus... And then the Gemara says, Malka bar Malka, Vatani Rav Yosef, Hinei Kata, Nisaticha Bagoyim, Shin Moshim, and Melech Ben Melech, Bazo Edomeot, Shin Lo Loksa, Velo Shloshon. Right? So the Gemara challenges this. We don't do that. Elamai Yom Ginusia. What is Yom Ginusia? Yom Aleida. It's the birthday of the king. Yes, amongst the many rayas in the Gemara that birthdays are not a primarily Jewish thing. There was a long article published on the... Long-ish. By what?
Zodiac.
Written by... By Galinkin. By Professor... David, whatever. He's the head of the Schechter Institute, like the conservative movement branch in Israel. So he wrote an article on, I think, in honor of his 50th birthday, someone else's 50th birthday, I'm not really sure, on birthdays. And he noted that there is Jewish precedent to celebrating specific birthdays, right? Like, there's a very old Jewish practice of celebrating your 60th birthday, because since the Gemara says that Kares means dying before 60, so there was a... Right?
It's in the Gemara, or it's post-Gemara?
The Gemara.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Not the birthday part of it. But and then there are people and then there were Rabbanim who celebrated their 70th birthday, because since that's the normal lifespan of a person, right? Right? So living more than 70 years, is it like a Suda's Hudah?
Okay.
Right? Obviously, Bar Mitzvah, right? And then there were like post-Gim who like on the 80th, right? Because, like the decades where the Gemara sort of analyzes, right? The Mishnah says the decades are important. So there were people who said like certain birthdays, but there's notion of like a yearly birthday. It's not like a... I don't want to get into that. That was a parenthetical point. I don't want to get into the birthday point. Yes?
That's not a random question. Is the conservative movement a big one?
In Israel, no. Not particularly. In America, yes. In numbers-wise, yes. Anyways, okay. Fine. So the... so the Gemara, so the Gemara said that the Romans don't actually put, sons of the king... in the throne, so it can't be right. So the Gemara says, okay, it's the birthday. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Vatani Yom Genusia vi Yom Alita. There's another writer that says Yom Genusia and birthday, which means it's not birthday. So Lakasha Hadivrei Hadidei Divrei. No, it's the birthday of the king or the birthday of the prince. Vatanya Yom Genusia Shalo, Yom Genusia Shalbano, Yom Alida Shalo, Yom Alida Shalbano. Right? No, there's another brisa that says his and his son's Yom Genusia and his son's birthday.
Right.
And the Ma Yom Genusia, so what is the Yom Genusia? Yom Shamita Vomalkam. It is inauguration day. Velo Kasha, Hadi Dev Hadibrei. What? Vi Kasha from Lokmi Malka Bar Malka. Right, and then you'll say, oh, but don't they not ever have dynasties? And Gemara says, no.
Wait, that's not the problem.
He says, right. He says, Al Yidei She'ela Mukme. So, no. They do have dynasties, but it's not automatic. Right?
But that's not. Isn't the question that Bryce quotes both?
Yeah. So now he says, one second. Okay, I can't even figure out the coronation question there, right? Okay. But the Gemara's question now is not on the language issue. It's first on V'kashalach l'luk mukme malka bar malka.
Right.
Don't they not have princes take over their fathers? The Gemara says, no. Well, they she'ela mukme. Right? Meaning, the princes don't automatically become kings, but if they ask the officers, then they do.
So that's like a side question.
Yes. Okay. But that's where our story comes up. Right, kigon asairus asverus. In English, they put it as as. I opened up the Koran to see who this is. Asverus, son of Antoninus. Okay, who bar Antoninus de Melech. And now the Gemara tells you an interesting story. So Amarle, and this is where we meet. Amarle Antoninus le Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe, "Beina dim loch asverus bar bri tachtoi. I want my son Asverus to be the king." It is Abe Tveria Kalanya, and I want to make Tveria putter from paying taxes. Okay?
Oh, because Rebbe lived there.
Possible. Yeah, something like that. V'emalu chada avdi treilo avde. If I say to my officers, to my advisors, do one of them, they'll do it. Right? I have political capital for one request, but two, no. So what am I supposed to do? Right, what am I supposed to do? Yes, inochinami. Wait, fine. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi responds to him in a riddle or a parable. I don't know what you want to define what's about to happen. I see Gavra Arkave Achavre. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi brings a person. He brings Yosef and he brings Danny and he puts Danny on Yosef's shoulders. V'yayv le yona li Eloi biyadeh, and he gave a dove to Danny on his shoulders. Danny into Danny. V'amar le l'tasa emar le elo le mifrach min yadeh yona. And then I told Yosef, tell Danny to let the dove go. Amar, so Antonino said, Shma mina hachik amarli. This is what he's telling me. At boy minayu das verus bri im loch tachtoi ve'emel as verus de tavid tveria kalanya. Right? I will request from my officers to make Asverus king, and I'll tell Asverus that his first legal, his first act as king should be to make Tveria a tax exempt place. What?
Oh, you tell the bottom guy to.
Why do you give him the dove?
He had a dove. The point is, he set him up with a dove.
Right?
He said,
Now the Gemara goes on.
Semitic.
Right? Now the Gemara goes on this for a while. Right? Of different advice that Yehuda Anasi would give Antoninus. We could read all of them, but I want to pick up on one imagery, okay? I want you to keep that image in your head for a minute, okay? Yeah. Now, skip down to Yud Amud Beis. Kol Yoma, you see Kol Yoma?
Kol Yoma.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, so Kol Yoma, we shudder le dahavo pricha b'matarta v'chite apumayu. No?
I found it.
Right, so every day, Antoninus would send Rabbi Yehuda crushed gold in large sacks with wheat at the opening of the sack. Amr lehu, and he would say to his servants, Amtuchiti le Rabbi, bring this wheat to Rabbi. Amr le Rabbi lo tzarichna, and Rabbi Yehuda said, I don't need gold. Right? Isli too, I have a lot. So Amr lahavin leman de bartach, de yavid le bartoi, de asur batrach, the also minayu nefuk alayhu. So Antonino says the gold should be to your descendants, who will give it to the last ones who come after you, etc., etc. And then you can pay the taxes that you need to pay to the Romans. Right, here's my.
Wait, what's this here?
He used to send Rebbe money. Rebbe tried to not take the money. Right, he would hide it in wheat, and then Antonino said, "Take it, and you'll pay off the Roman taxes." Okay. Right, you have money now, but okay, it's my. But fine. So. Amr le havi le hahu nakart of Eilim Vesilis Rebbe Kol Yoma. He would, every day he had a tunnel that he would go to his house to the Rebbe, and he would bring students with him. And Maisi Tre Avdi, Chad Katle Abava, Debe Rebbe, Chad Katle Abava, Debe Se. He would bring two servants every day, and he would kill them both. One on the way in, one on the way out, so no one ever knew what he was doing. And he would tell Rebbe Danasi to make sure that no one's ever there. Right, he didn't want people to see what was going on. Right, then obviously the story happens that it once happened. Right, that someone was there. V'chule. So skip down. Another kol yoma. So kol yoma. Right. So the Gemara sets this up that he used to in secret go to Rebbe. And what would he do? So kol yoma having mishamish the Rebbe. Every day he would serve Rebbe. Machile, mashkile. He would give him food. He would give him drink. Kivei by Rebbe lemesak lepuraya. And when Rebbe would want to go to bed, he would lie down on the floor. And Amar sak ilavai lipurayach, and say, go on my back to climb into bed. Amar and Rebbe said, lav urach aral zuzuzim achuzeh kulay hai. Like, I get it that you like me and you want to respect me, but you don't do that to a king. You don't humiliate a king that way. And Amar, miyim shamsheni matza tachtechel lamaba. He said, oh, if only I were a mattress under you in the world to come. Right? Like, don't worry about it. And, so Amar le, asinu almodasi. A different time, Antonina said, am I going to the world to come? Right? What's the answer? Amar le in? Said, yep. Amar le, vaksiv lo yes, sarid leves, esav, ba'usa, maisa, esav. He said, oh, but doesn't it say in Ovadia that no one shall remain from base Esav, and I am from Esav? Right? He says, yeah, that's only the people who act like Esav, but not you. Tani nami hachi, lo yeh, sarid leves Esav, yachol lakol, tamalon leves Esav, ba'osa maise Esav. Okay? Good? Mm-hmm. Are we weirded out yet?
Super weird.
Okay, good. Let's try one more story. Okay? Okay, go now to Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Guys, go to Yud Aleph Amud Beis.
Yeah.
Yom Tiglachat Zikno. Right at the top of the page. Another holiday was the day that he used to shave his beard.
Okay.
Great. Skip down two lines from there. So Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Got that?
Yeah.
He says, Oda Cheret Yesh Lehem Baromi. There's a different holiday in Rome. Achad l'shivim shana, once every 70 years, mevi'in adam shalem u'markivin oto al adam chiger. They take a regular person and they put him on the shoulders of someone who limps, right? A lame person. U'malbishin oto bigdei adam arishon, and they dress him up in the clothes of adam arishon. U'manichin lo birosho kar kiflo shor bishmal, and they put on him the skin that was scraped off the face of Rabbi Shmuel. They put on the mask of his actual skin. Uh-huh. Remember that story, the Asari Arugamalchus? They peeled off the face of Rabbi Shmuel, you know?
Yeah.
You remember this story?
Yeah.
Right, the horrible story?
Yeah.
Yeah, the daughter wanted to see the beauty of Rabbi Shmuel, so she had him peel off the actual face.
Yeah.
So they took that and they put it as a mask.
Yes.
Okay.
No, seriously. This is an Agadata. One second. I don't know. The Talulei Bitzavar, they put it on his neck, Mitkalri. Zuzah the Pisa, umechaven as a shvik shakim beinach, umachrizin lefonav, sachkari plester, achva demarno zayafna, techame chame udlo chame lo chame, mayahani lerama birama usei, ulazayfana bizayfusne, Umisaimin behachi vailaden kad yakum dein. You're like, what the heck did I just read? Right? Okay, I'll read you the English just quickly. Right? It is not an easy passage to read, okay? This is what it means. So, they would hang gold on his neck, weighing 200 dinars, cover the markets with onyx. I don't know why. Announced before him, the calculation of the master Jacob with regard to the time of the redemption is fraudulent. The brother of our master, i.e. of Esav, is a forger. They further announce one who witnesses this festival witnesses, and whoever does not witness it will never witness it, because it's once every 70 years, right? One chance per lifetime. What purpose does deceit serve for the deceiver and forgery for the forger? And they conclude in this fashion, woe unto this one, Esav, when that one, Jacob, will arise, as this will cause Esav's downfall.
Whack.
Okay. What?
That is whack.
Yes. One more, right? Not in Avodah Zarah, but is on the pasuk of Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, right? Mm-hmm. What? How do Chazal understand it? There's a midrash. Shnei Goyim. How do they translate that?
Two
names. No, sorry, it is here. Yeah, no, it is here. It is on Daf. One second. Yud Aleph and Aleph. Vayomer Lashnem, Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, two nations in your womb. I'll just read it to you. Amar Rabbi Marav, Al Tikri Goyim Ela Geim. Not nations, but what is Geim?
Proud.
Proud ones. Ze Antoninus Virebi. These are Antoninus and Rebbe, right? They are prefigured already.
Right.
That they always had vegetables, which was a sign of great wealth, right? Even in the winter.
Right.
Right, having vegetables in the winter, this was great, great wealth. Right, that wilted salad, you know? Wealth! Wealth, people.
Right, right.
See what we do for you here in McDonald's. I'm joking. The salad is wonderful. It was a joke. Right, okay. So now. So, what?
Get us out of here.
Right, so let's. There are obviously many others, but what is going on in the Zagaritas?
Yeah.
Right? What is going on? So I want to try to, right, like I said, this I thought was an interesting analysis. And I want to analyze a few of the common themes. If you just took those Zagaritic passages, what common themes do we see and what can we analyze? So what themes come up more than once?
Rome sucks, Jews are awesome.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Rome... bad. Jews?
Great.
Good. What other themes come up?
Antoninus, Antoninus, whatever, worship Rebbe.
What?
Antoninus really likes
good.
Rebbe.
Antoninus?
Rebbe likes.
He likes and?
Respects.
And?
Gives to?
He is in certain sense subservient to
yeah.
Rebbe. Right? Okay, to Rebbe. Okay. What other theme?
Rebbe gives him advice.
What? Sure. Well, that's probably all in this, right? Respects, whatever. What else? What are the themes? Right?
Esav versus Yaakov.
Good. Esav versus Yaakov. What else? What theme comes up at least twice? Let's look at these and we'll start to build a pattern here. What about Esav versus Yaakov?
Yaakov wins.
No.
Esav wins.
No.
They go up and down. When one's on top...
One goes up, the other goes down.
Right.
Right? There's never...
equal.
Never equal. Right? Right? So there's more than one time that this theme comes up. When did, right? Right? Don't just take my word for it. One is clearly the 70-year holiday.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Right now, look at the Jews, the Chiger, the lame one, right, for deceiving Yaakov. But, oi to the Romans when...
Right,
when it flips. Right? Oi lezeh, right? But where else? Definitely. Where else is there a nice flip?
Oh, where he's where he wants him to sit on his back, stand on his back to get.
Yeah, Antoninus is the actual king. So Rebbe. Who is actually subservient?
Rebbe.
Who's acting subservient?
Antoninus.
Antoninus. right? Which means that there is a not a flip as much as both at the same time.
Right.
That in reality, Antoninus is
king.
In practice, he's right treating Rebbe with respect, but there's also another illusion of power going on here, which is that it looks like Antoninus has power, but who actually has power?
Rebbe.
His
Torah.
Rebbe or
Olam Haba. God.
The officers.
Officer.
Remember?
Oh, yes.
He's afraid of... He looks like he's the emperor.
Right, right.
But he has to defer to the officers, and who gives Antoninus power over the officers?
Rebbe.
How?
Because he asks him about about his son, I guess.
Trickery. Right? Trickery. Remember? That thing that brought Yaakov on top of Esav to begin with?
Right?
Remember that? Right? Mm-hmm. Don't be fraudulent. This is what happens to fraudulent people. Right. Except Rebbe instructing Antoninus in how to trick the officers is what gave Antoninus his power.
Yeah.
Right? Right? You sort of see there's some themes that might be hinting here. Now there's one more image that I want that is floating around in this story, and then we can try to bring it back together, that will bring in one more Yaakov Esav moment, which is, go to the 70-year one. Okay? The 70-year, what's going on in the 70-year story? What story does that remind you of?
Yovel.
No. Not run away.
Rabbi Yochanan getting his face ripped off.
Walking through the streets of the city, declaring, so shall happen to the person.
Haman and Mordechai. Yeah, good.
Kacha yeah, Yasel Eishah Shamelach Hafeitz Biker. Except it's a pervert. It's a perversion of it.
Right.
Right. It's right. Esav. Right. Think about it. Right. What's that story? That story is right.
Mordechai
the Jew on top of the Esav figure, so to speak.
Right.
Out of a sign of respect, and this time it's the Esav on top of the Jew,
yeah.
Right? But with the recognition that sometimes
it flips.
It can flip. Right? So this, whichever book I was reading, right, pointed out that there seems to be a sort of, what do I call
cyclical.
It? Cyclical. These agadot taken together seem to be a rumination of the Gemara on the power dynamics, the nature of the biblical and historical power dynamics between Yaakov and Esav. Mm-hmm. Right? Right, so if we start the first one, right? Like historically, right? The first one historically is Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. Right? Now Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, at one level it means Esav and Yaakov. Right? Now Esav and Yaakov are like traditional enemies. But at another level, what does it mean for the Gemara?
Rebbe and
Antoninus. So the first thing the Gemara says is that the nature of this relationship is complicated.
Right?
Sometimes it manifests itself literally as Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, Yaakov and Esav at loggerheads, and sometimes it manifests itself as
them respecting
as Rebbe and Antoninus, as them being great together. Right?
Right.
Where does the Gemara then build on that theme? Antoninus' conversation with Rebbe. Rebbe, am I going to Olam Haba?
Mm.
And Rebbe says, yes. And he says, how?
Right.
Ovadia says that Esav is doomed to hell. Right? And what does he say?
Only
Ba'ose Masa Esav. Meaning, it doesn't need to be that way. Right? There, throughout history, the Yaakov-Esav story doesn't always manifest itself the same way. Sometimes it manifests itself in Ovadia-esque, which is, if the Esavs of the world act like Esav, then it's Yaakov versus Esav. But if the Esavs of the world don't act like Esav, then it's Shnei Geim Bivitneich, two proud nations that can work together,
right.
Not two nations at loggerheads. Right?
Sure.
Then the Gemara continues and it says, right? The reality of their world was what? What's the reality of Chazal's world?
That Rome was on top.
Rome's on top. Right? Chazal need to explain theologically how this works. Right? How do you grapple with it? Right? That's the point of Agadot, right? To teach people how to deal with things. Right? Theological lessons. So, They tell a story, right? Which is that even the Romans understand that what? Right? Right? The Romans understand that why are they on top?
Because the Jews.
Because we're bad. We're the bad ones, not them. We're the frauds.
Right.
Right? But at the last minute, what do they recognize?
The Jews are going to win.
Well, not that they're going to win, right? The Romans at least recognize, they don't realize the Jews are going to win, but what do they realize?
They're going to fall.
Well, no.
That there's a that it's not forever. Right? Meaning, their perception that we're bad, right? Meaning, what the end of that Agadata calls into question the beginning. Right? Meaning, the Romans are presenting it as if they will always be on top because we're evil and we deserve this. But at the end of the day, they admit that it's not eternal. Mm-hmm. Because when the Jews go up, they'll go down, which means that their original claim that we're evil and therefore deserve to be on the bottom forever is
false.
Is false. Right? The reality is that, right, this is cyclical. Yes, if we do the wrong thing, we'll be on the bottom, but it's not forever because we're not flawed from the original moment, right? Think about what they're putting in the Romans' mouth, right? The Romans claim that fundamentally they're always above us because Yaakov sinned. But then they undercut themselves by saying, but it's possible the Jews will end up on top again, right? Which is Chazal's subtle way of saying, don't think that this is the future forever, right? That you're fundamentally flawed from the beginning. Recognize that this is historically contingent. How do they continue telling that story? Antoninus and Rebbe. They tell a story which, who knows, it probably didn't happen quite the way they tell it.
I
would doubt it. But what's the story?
Well, he'd be at a soldier's pretty quick.
Right? But what's the story? Right? What does the story tell us that the good people amongst Rome, guys, what does it tell them that the good people amongst Rome recognize that what? That Yaakov really is the one that's meant to be on top. Mm-hmm. Right? And then there's a. And that. Specifically by doing that, right? Meaning Antoninus is willing to lower himself.
Yeah.
Right? But by doing that, what does he Mimela actually do?
Raising himself.
He raises himself. He makes it possible for
them to both be together.
For them to both make it into Olam Haba, right? Back to the Shnei Geim Bevitneich, right? Meaning if Esav recognizes that we're not fundamentally flawed, right? Then by right, the only way out of this cycle is for what? Is for mutual respect. Mm. If we're at loggerheads, right, then only one of us can be on top.
Yeah.
But were Esav to recognize that the Jews are fundamentally, right, have the truth with them, then, right, we could
get on top. Or be equal.
We could be equal. But the way that the Gemara, it's not quite equal, right? What does the Gemara do, right? It's instead of saying it's equal, what does the Gemara do? It paints a picture of a complex relationship, right? Where it looks like Antoninus is on top, and at a certain level he is. But the Yaakov figure is sort of also on top, right? Meaning, it's not, right? Because think about it, even within that story, right? The part that I skipped, right? But we just saw the beginning of, is one day he comes and someone's at Rebbe's and he yells at him, why'd you let anyone be here? Meaning, right? Clearly, and Rebbe has to defend himself. Meaning, Rebbe's not actually on top.
Right.
Right? That Antoninus is on top. Right? Politically.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, there's a complicated. It's the story of not everything that, right, meets the eye. And then the story of the officers, right, is saying that what? Right? What does that story do? It redeems the 70-year story. Mm. Right? The 70-year story is what? The Jews lied at the beginning. Yaakov lied at the beginning, and therefore they're damned forever. And what does this story tell you? No. A little bit of deception is sometimes necessary. Right? And Dafka, it's the Yaakovness, right? The deceptiveness of Rebbe,
right,
that allows Antoninus to maintain his power, which is a total conceptual inversion of the story of Yaakov and Esav, but Mimela, it also acts as what? It's a sort of a subtle theological justification of saying, well, sometimes a bit of deception is necessary to do what's right.
Right.
Right? But Mimela, if Antoninus accepts Rebbe's deceptive advice to maintain his power, Mimela, he's providing justification for Yaakov, which provides theological justification for why Yaakov will one day rise, and this is a cyclical relationship rather than the Jews are always on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Right? And there were this argument, I've developed a little bit more than this, the book I was reading, but what they claim, I think compellingly, is that at some level, right, Meaning, the way I would put it a little bit is that the Jews can't speak too openly about Rome is going to fall, right? Like, you can't just do that. Like, you're amongst the Romans, right? There's been censorship for forever, right? But if you want to convey sort of a theological lesson and give people hope, right? The way you do it is you write a little bit in code, right? And I think these Agadotot sort of dance around this question by telling stories that remind us that the relationship that we have with Esav is not the way it always has been or needs to be, and things aren't always as they seem, and we have value, right? We're not downtrodden forever, right? Rome can have respect for us. We can coexist, right? And sometimes we might be on top, right? The way they tell that is by playing with these images, and I think the fact that it sort of plays with the Esther image is telling, right? Because that's like the... Exactly, right? That's what this book argued compellingly, is that that story, I think, right, I read it, and I think Purim, right? Meaning, it's the Vinafochu. That story brings to mind the possibility of things not being as they are, right? Meaning, invoking the Esther story is sort of Chazal's wink towards, you know, on a dime, it can go from Esav being on top and the Jews facing destruction to Mordechai being on top and Esav having to show him honor. But that's literally this. All these messages are exactly what Purim is all about. Is that that eternal relationship and complexity of Esav versus Yaakov, right, can change very quickly. It's not always one way or the other. It's not always as things change. Everything can be done on a vocal, and the Jews are sort of hinting to themselves that this can change too. Right? And again, I haven't fully worked out my thoughts on this parak, but I think the fact that there is a right, a series of Agadotot flowing through the parak that is a rumination on what is the nature of power, right? What is the undertone? Are we really the underdogs, right? Or is there something else going on? Are there values beyond political power that make it that we're not really as downtrodden as we think we are? Is there hope, right? Chazal are sort of weaving these stories together to tell you, yes, there is. Yes, there's more to this story. Yes, there's another way this could be. The last point I'll raise, which I think is one of the best, I don't know if I mentioned this agadic point to you before. I don't even know which academic first made this point, but I've heard it quoted by several people, which I think sort of fills out the picture. You know the midrash that no one understands, as because it just seems like overkill on when the pasuk says that Esav returned from the sadeh, right? Remember,
like all the he killed people.
Right? Oh, yeah, it says, he murdered and committed Avodah Zarah, right? And you look at it and you're like, why are you being so hard on Esav? Right? So there was an academic who pointed out they're not being hard on Esav at all. Right? What is it? It's the Jews talking about the Romans without saying it.
Right?
Right? Because the average Roman officer on an average day, what did he do? He worshipped Avodah Zarah, he raped Jewish women, and he killed Jews. What did they do? That is what they did.
Right?
That's literally what they did. Right? But you can't just say that, right? You can't just come out and say, oh, you Roman officers, right? You commit the three cardinal sins every day. Right? You can't say, you murderous pagan rapists, right? But they were murderous pagan rapists. Right? Meaning, the point of this is, right, that many Agadotot about Esav, right, are Chazal's theological way of, you know, without being censored too much, talking about the difficulties they had with the Roman culture around them, right? And therefore, whenever you see these long extended Agadotot talking about the nature of Rome or specific Romans, right, or stories or Esav, right, it's Chazal grappling with the reality of the Roman power around them and trying to talk about it theologically with a broader view of history and maybe a little bit of censorship, right? And I think that's why you sometimes need to, right, for very practical reasons, right, read between the lines of what Chazal are saying on these, because they were under, you know, they were often under Roman control when they were saying these things, right? So obviously you can't be too explicit.
Right,
you have to hint at things, right, rather than just say them outright. You can't just say the Romans are going to fall because that's we're going to rebel, right? You can say maybe the Romans have a holiday and they say, you know, and they invoke biblical psukim, which is so convoluted that by the time the person realizes what's going on, right. Okay, so again, this is sort of an initial thought about this. I haven't I haven't systematically gone through it, but I think it is undeniable that when you put these Agadot together and you realize the imagery that comes up over and over, right? This is Chazal's attempt at providing theological language to sort of the political situation that they found themselves in. Okay?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.